Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk leader.
Closing out the month of September. Today's the 29th. Hi, everybody. I'm Andy. Thanks for tuning in to the program. Yeah, September is waning. And, it'll be October on Wednesday. Good friend Jimmy Kesson is back in town. We'll have him on, I think, tomorrow. We're working on that one. Just some crazy news over the weekend. And it just feels like, you know, all that stuff that was going on in the world, the wars and the school shootings and the assassinations, the crazy things before 2 weeks ago, 2.5 weeks ago now, it felt like it was somewhere else. It wasn't us. It had nothing to do with us, right? We have our bubble here in Washington County, and we don't, even in Utah, we don't get that crap, I guess, for lack of a better word. And then it turns out, okay, assassination in Utah by someone from Washington City. And then it turns out a mass shooting at a Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints chapel. Well, that's the predominant religion here. And even though the shooting was in Michigan, I think a lot of us who are members of that religion feel a kinship to what happened. And then the graphic video of the guy attacking and killing the woman on this trolley car in North Carolina, it's starting to get more and more real, you know, and I don't like it. You know, I love our bubble. And years ago when I moved to St. George, my wife and I made the decision together to raise our kids here because we felt like this was a place where all that stuff didn't happen, right? It didn't happen here in Washington County, in Southern Utah. And so this is the perfect place to raise children. And it was. I have five great kids. I'm proud to say I've never had to bail any of them out of jail. Never had to have a shotgun wedding with any of them. I mean, they're all productive. Well, I should say they're all productive members. Three of the five are. Two of them are in college still, so I guess the jury's still out. But I feel like they're on their way. I'm not condemning Washington County by any stretch of the imagination. I'm just saddened that some of the stuff is starting to hit just a little too close to home. The scenario yesterday, if you haven't heard about this, you probably haven't been online in the last 24 plus hours. This guy who, according to reports from CNN and Fox News, just hates Mormons, hates members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. This guy decided he was going to, I don't know, take him out. He drove his truck through the front doors of a chapel in a town called Grand Blanc or Grand Blanc, Michigan. When people rushed toward him to see if it was an accident, if he was hurt, he jumped out of the truck and opened fire on them. Killed two, injured others. Then set the church on fire. At some point, I don't quite understand how he had time. I guess he had time. I don't know how he had time to set the church on fire, but he used an accelerant, gasoline, they believe, to start the church burning. At least two people were trapped in the church and were killed in the fire, at least. There are seven unaccounted for people right now, and they are going through the wreckage, for lack of a better word, of the church, trying to see if there is evidence of the people that are missing were also killed. What a horrific scene. Police identified the suspected gunman as Thomas Jacob Sanford, a 40-year-old from Michigan, actually 8 miles away. He lived 8 miles from the church, who said he hated Mormons. Don't know why. We'll find out. It'll come out as the case develops. But statements were put out by the governor, Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer, and by the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. The church said, this is Doug Anderson, a spokesman for the church, said it was a tragic act of violence, but the church is grateful for the global outpouring of prayers and support. He emphasized, Anderson, that places of worship are meant to be sanctuaries for peace, prayer, and connection. It's supposed to be. By now, you probably have seen the video of the church burning. Huge, huge fire. I think a lot of people, my wife included, she said, I didn't realize it was so big. Yeah, he burned down a gigantic chapel. Basically, a whole city block of this church. And the fire is stunning. You say, well, how can, if there were people in the church, couldn't they have gone out a different exit? Well, imagine, say, you're in the bathroom and the hallway's on fire. What do you do? I don't know. I don't know. Where do you go? How do you get out? Whole thing is, again, is just, and I've been saying it quietly to those around me, that I said something like that is going to happen here. Somebody's going to shoot up a church or a school. And I had someone ask me, why hasn't it happened already? There's this year, my wife read this, this year, a mass shooting, which I think is defined as three or more people killed, has happened over 300 times in the United States in 9 months, almost 10 months. No, 9 months, yeah. Over 300 times. And again, my friend asked me, why do you think it hasn't happened here? The only thing I can surmise, and why it hasn't happened here in Washington County, is that we are, like in Texas, not Michigan, like in Texas, a lot of people in this state are, we carry, we have guns. And it's got to be at least a slight deterrent to a gunman, to somebody like this Sanford fellow, to think, hey, I'm going to go shoot up a church. Oh, wait, I might not have time. They might kill me before I can do what it is I want to do. And, you know, and we go to the, okay, what about schools? They got the SRO, that's it. Well, no, now Utahns have two, every school, every secondary, I think every school, anyway, has what we call guardians. This was a law that was put into effect in the state of Utah where two members of the staff, not teachers or administrators, two members of the staff are armed, concealed carry. And again, if you're a crazy shooter, if you're somebody that I want to be famous, I want to kill a bunch of people and be on the CNN and Fox and the Andy Griffin Show and all that stuff. Well, you're not going to go somewhere there where there might already be guns waiting for you. You want to go somewhere where you're likely to be able to accomplish the task, and that's not here. That is not here. So do I think it will never happen here? No, I do not. I believe somebody's going to try it sometime. I think it'll be maybe someone that hates the Mormon Church, maybe someone who hates the conservative and Christian beliefs of people of Washington County. You know, perhaps a person who's bought into counterculture like this Robinson fella did that killed Charlie Kirk. This is the saddest thing of all. In this culture of ours that we've developed, Kids playing Call of Duty and Fortnite. I mean, don't get me wrong. I grew up with video games too, but we didn't. I never once thought it would translate into, you know, actually shooting a human. No. But this culture that we have now is these young people are like, I mean, I told you about the study last week, right? Right? The study that said of people who consider themselves, and they had a scale. They said, are you very conservative, moderate, liberal, or very liberal? Of the people in the last category, the very liberal category, 17%, that's one in six, 17% said political violence is sometimes necessary, is justified. One in six. Think about that. That means that if, well, I'll let you extrapolate that to who that applies to. But just think about that. One in six people who consider themselves very liberal, somebody into the counterculture a little bit. One in six. That means a room full of 12 of them. Two of them think political violence is okay. Room full of 30 of them. That means five of them think it's okay. It just blows me away. Anyway, very upsetting. And we're going to find out more. We are very early on. It's 24 hours from when it happened. And they're still trying to find out if the guy left a note, if he premeditated this whole thing, if something happened. Here's my suspicion. This is what I think. This guy in Michigan who drove his truck into the church and shot people and killed them. I think the church, in some way, he, in his mind, it wronged him. Whether it's, maybe someone he knows, he took counsel from the church and it affected his life. Maybe he is a former member or he has a family member who was affected by the church somehow. I don't think, now I encountered what I would say is hatred, when I was a missionary for the church years and years ago. But it wasn't violent hatred. It was, you're wrong, you're going to hell hatred. I got some of that. There's a couple of faiths out there that, back when I was a missionary, there was a movie out called The God Makers. It was a very anti-Mormon movie. And they would play it at different religious gatherings to try to sow hatred at Mormons, make people angry at us. And I never watched the movie. I had no interest in that. It's one of those deals like I have a friend who believes anti-Mormon sources. Like this, here's him. Okay, well, that's true. The same guy will not believe Mormon sources on the same topic. I'm like, why do you believe that and not this? He said, well, you know, because why would they lie? I'm like, yeah, why would they lie? Anyway, I think that this guy's life was touched somehow in a way that he perceived was negative having to do with the church. I don't think it's a religious thing. There are religions that preach against the Mormon church that just say these guys are, you know, they're sacrilegious or whatever. I don't think it was that, because even the most, not the most, because there are Islamic extremists, but most religions in America do not preach violence at all. And they may think that Mormons are terrible, but they're not going to do anything physically to them. So I don't think it was religiously based. I think it was something happened in this guy's life. Maybe he perceived it was the Mormon's fault and he was going to get revenge. The thing that doesn't make sense, and I still don't understand with the warped mind of people like Tyler Robinson and this Thomas Sanford, the thing I don't understand is why they think that shooting, killing innocent people, people that had didn't do anything to them. They didn't do anything. In the case of this guy in Michigan, one of the reports said one of the two dead, for sure, well, there's four dead now, was a child. How could even the most twisted mind justify the killing of innocent people, people who did nothing, innocent children? How could they justify that as being okay? What broke in this dude's head? I don't know. Something. Also yesterday, by the way, it was Saturday night, the leader of the LDS Church, Russell M. Nelson, passed away at the age of 101. And it's kind of, there's kind of irony in me saying that, because Russell M. Nelson was the first president of the church that really pushed hard to get away from church nicknames. He said famously once, "We are not Mormons. We are not LDS. We are members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints." And a lot of people had fun with that. I'm not a Mormon. No, you're not a Mormon. You're a member of the church. Anyway, I just thought that was interesting. I can't imagine they're related at all. President Nelson passing away and then this guy going crazy like that. I have no idea. All right, let's look at some texts here before we go. We've got about 5 minutes till weather. I heard that he drove into a side entrance of the church. They stopped going in to rescue people for a few minutes as they were concerned about the incendiary devices in the truck. Yeah, that's what I heard too. And I talked with Rory from NBC News earlier today, and he said there were, in fact, explosive devices in the truck. They did not go off, but they were worried about them. All right, let's see what else we got here. That was Jan. Jeanette says, I don't understand. Have they said how, when he set up for this fire, gasoline poured on the church? He did so much before being stopped. Again, I'm with you, Jeanette. I don't understand how he had time to do all this. They said a police officer was exchanging gunfire with him within 30 seconds, and he died within 8 minutes. So explain the gasoline, the fire. I don't understand it. It will all come out. Again, we're just guessing. So, okay, this is, kindly ask your reference to the church not being Mormon. I know it's easier, and a lot of people here know that you're referring to, but at the time we say farewell to the prophet who made the name of the church an important topic, it would be much appreciated for us as listeners who want others to know us for who we really are. Yeah, as I understand it, and I don't think I'm wrong, but I could be wrong. Russell M. Nelson basically came in and he said, one of the basic tenets, one of the things that Jesus Christ, when he was on the earth, said, that what my church will bear my name. And so Russell M. Nelson said, listen, we are not LDS. We are not Mormons. We are members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And that is why he put the movement together to stop the nicknames. Because he was quoting scripture right there. He says, listen, the church bears the name of Jesus Christ, and therefore we are the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And all the nicknames, they do not apply here. They're incorrect. By the way, the secession of leadership in the church has always been. Now, just because something has always been doesn't mean that it will be. But if the church holds true to what has happened in the past, the new prophet will be Dallin H. Oaks. Now, what the church has done in the past as far as succession is that the leader of the church, when he passes away, the next leader is the president of the Quorum of the 12 Apostles. Even though the presidency, the first and second counselor with the guy that passed away, seems like maybe one of them should be the next prophet, it's rarely that person, because that person is not the president of the 12 Apostles. So Dallin H. Oaks is the president. Now, he was actually a member of the first presidency. He was a counselor. I think it was to Monson. But he is now the president of the Quorum of the 12. And it is very likely, not 100% for sure, but very likely that he will be the next president of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Very likely. Okay. Okay, right now I have some stuff to give away. If you would like to go to the corn maze on the Staley Family Farm, text CORN to me at 435-467-5842. I have four tickets to give away. So two winners. Two winners get two tickets each. Text CORN to 435-467-5842. The other item I have is a $10 gift card to Angelica's. And you can try that amazing sweet pork or the quesadilla or the elote or whatever it is you want to try. If you would rather have that, then text ANGEL to 435-467-5842. Again, I've got two separate two-packs of tickets to the Staley Family Farm Corn Maze. It's open now. And I have $10 to Angelica's. Text me CORN if you want the Corn Maze. Text me ANGEL if you want the Angelica's. Right now, I will step aside for a check of weather, and I will check your texts. 435-467-5842.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back, 933 on KDXU. I'm Andy. Thanks for tuning in. Got some winners, Brad and Anthony. Brad got the Angelica's. Anthony got a couple of Corn Maze passes. And someone else also won the Corn. I'm waiting for them to get back to me with a name. So, okay. Well, we got to, by the way, thanks so much for listening and thanks so much for playing today. I love giving stuff away. I really do. I would give stuff away all day, every day if that was, if I was allowed. Everybody knows that. I'm like, yeah. We'll give a whole bunch of stuff away and people will love it and they'll love the show and they'll love free stuff. Well, when I have it, trust me, I give it away whenever I get it. It's a lot of fun. 934 on KDXU. We're going to go away from, there was one other news story I wanted to mention before I do that. It is the stabbing at the bar. Now I'm going to read you the news story straight and then we'll talk about it a little bit. Two bar employees were hospitalized after being stabbed during an altercation in St. George Saturday night. Yes, in St. George. Police say 22-year-old Mario Perez was kicked out of the one and only bar after appearing intoxicated and trying to punch a bystander. He later returned with a knife and when confronted by staff, stabbed both men, one near the clavicle, a wound that would require emergency surgery. Perez resisted arrest but was subdued with a taser. A search of his vehicle turned up a knife sheath, open beer bottles, and suspected THC gummies. He was booked into Purgatory Correctional Facility on multiple charges, including two counts of aggravated assault with serious bodily injury. I think at this point, both men that were injured are not, their lives are not in danger. So it won't turn into murder charges, thankfully. My question is, why not attempted murder? I mean, clearly, this was pretty premeditated. He got kicked out. Now, yeah, I know he was drunk, and some people say, well, it's not as bad because he was drunk. Well, maybe it's worse, though. Anyway, he left the scene, drove drunk, and by the way, one of the charges was DUI, I saw on the arresting deal. He drove somewhere, got a knife, and came back. That sounds pretty premeditated to me. I mean, you could say, well, heat of the moment. He was angry. He was upset. I don't know. It sounds like he made a decision. He calculated and said, all right, they're going to kick me out. I'll show them. I'm going to go get my knife, and I'm going to stab people. I don't really have any more details on it other than that. I had someone say to me yesterday, you know, they ought to just get rid of all the bars in St. George. And you know me, I'm a conservative guy. And as much as that sounds really cool, get rid of the bars. It's not going to happen. I mean, all of us who tout freedom, right? Who tout capitalism, who tout America and being able to be a free agent of your own personal life, right? How in the world could we condemn a bar? How is that okay? I don't like bars. I don't go to bars. I don't drink. But I'll be darned if I'm ever going to say, you can't do that. That's not my job. I'm an American. I believe in freedom. And if somebody wants to go to a bar and drink, then let them. Now, again, within the public intoxication is against the law. If you're walking around acting like an idiot, driving under the influence is against the law. There are so many things that are illegal when you do drink. And you're clearly your judgment is impaired when you drink, right? So, but I'm not going to tell you you can't drink. But I will tell you you better not get behind a vehicle when you're drunk, when you're buzzed, whatever. And I don't know. Like I said, you tend to get really, really bad judgment when you partake of the fire water, so to speak. There was a fire over the weekend in Ivins, an apartment building. They believe it was caused by a lightning strike. Remember, we had those big thunder bumpers on Friday. Santa Clara Ivins fire was able to knock that thing down so it didn't spread to other buildings. But, yeah, there was actually a fire call this morning, but it turned out to be just a little kitchen fire and nothing actually burned down. That's good. I think that's it for local news for now. There's some other stuff, but none of it's, like, major. I wanted to see if there was any more. Well, we'll do that later. I want to talk now for a few minutes about America versus some places in Europe. You say, oh, no, here we go again. No, I just want to. There are some things that impress me about Europe, and I struggled to find the right words to describe them. But... a guy by the name of Walker Larson, writing on intellectualtakeout.org, summed it up pretty good for me. This is pretty good. He was in Italy just a few weeks ago, and he said, Italian culture is suffused with beauty, and the Italians seem to have a much broader and deeper aesthetic sense than we Americans do. It's a particular weakness of American culture that it inclines toward the ugly, the vulgar, and the utilitarian. Maybe because of our pragmatic Puritan roots, we don't value beauty in our public spaces very highly. But the human soul was made with the capacity to recognize and appreciate beauty. And our culture ought to honor this instinct placed in us by the Creator. Beauty elevates, ennobles, consoles, and inspires. It's no exaggeration to say that ugly environments and a lack of taste can be a demoralizing factor in society. You see what he's saying? If you're surrounded by beauty, you're more likely to act like a beautiful human being. Again, this back to Larson's article. Italians seem generally attuned to beauty, from the gorgeous landscapes of places like the Cinque Terre coastline to the preservation of stately classical architecture, to the richly decorated centuries-old churches, to the multitude of Italian painters, musicians, and sculptors, to the sense of style in dress and presentation in food. Beauty is everywhere in Italy. This is a sign of humane culture. It is a deeply human thing to incorporate beauty into daily life. It's something that sets us apart from animals who do not have aesthetic sense. Italy showed me how everything from street lamps to banks can be both functional and beautiful. It's not an either-or binary. And again, if you think about what we have here, look around town. Now, naturally, this is a beautiful place. We've got red rocks and black cliffs and... it's just a beautiful place. But is your house beautiful? Is the bank beautiful? Is the restaurant beautiful that you go to? I would submit, probably not really. I mean, it's not. I mean, we all like to have a nice house. Yeah, it's nice to have a nice house. But do you have statues and gargoyles and pillars and archways and no? Yeah, me neither. My house is nice, but it's not, like, wow at all. I mean, when I went to Europe, what I saw was a people that really, really, really cared about how things looked in their daily life. They invested in art and statues and music and... I mean, of course, you had utilitarian things like trains, right? And and vehicles and roads, but interspersed among all that were these incredibly gorgeous architectural accomplishments. And for me, I'm like, man, why can't we be more like that? And someone said, well, you know, in Europe, they don't have yards. Most places don't have yards. They're, you know, almost like row homes or whatever. And so they put all their money they would spend on a yard, which we have here, into making their house look better. I guess you could make that argument. Okay. But, man, some of our yards are even not very nice. I have a neighbor. I'm not going to say their names, but they are across the street and a couple of houses down. They have statues. They have perfectly manicured yard with stones and statues and water features. I look at this house and I'm like, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. They don't pay someone to do it. They do it themselves. They're out there working all the time in that thing to make it beautiful. And, you know, my house is nice. We keep it neat and clean, but it's not a work of art, really. So, anyway, the title of this article by this Larson guy is Four Lessons Americans Must Learn from Italian Culture. Number one is, I don't know, just maybe take a page out of Italy or Switzerland or France or Germany and go, yeah, I want my house, my dwelling place to be a work of art. Invest in that statue. Why not? Buy that painting. To me, it's worth it. Anyway, all right. Number two thing to learn from Italian culture. According to Walker Larson, another admirable aspect of Italian culture is its understanding of food and eating. And I've read some on this. A couple of different books I read talk about this a lot. But in Italy, a meal is not a pragmatic affair of inserting calories into the body while dashing out the door, driving, or crashing in front of the TV. It is a cultural and social act. People in Italy eat with intentionality and relish, not mindlessly, which is probably one reason they tend to be thinner. The meal becomes a focal point for social interaction, conversation, laughter. It's accompanied by fine wine, and the courses can stretch on for some time, maybe hours, with conversation stretching even longer. When I was in Italy, the piazza adjoining my accommodation was often filled with laughter, talk, and clinking glasses well into the night, sometimes until 1 a.m. Maybe it's because Italians respect the sacredness of communal meals that they insist on high-quality ingredients as well. Food is taken seriously, understood as a cornerstone of culture and one of the basic forms of social cohesion. The commodification and industrialization of food has wounded American culture far more than we realize. So lesson one is make our homes, make our everyday lives into beauty. Number two is turn mealtime into something special, into something important. Make your mealtime something that everybody gets on board with and goes, yeah, this is, yeah, let's sit together and talk and, you know, don't have a boxed macaroni and hot dogs, right? Have a real meal, homemade pasta and vegetables and fruits and sauces and meats. And I mean, I can tell you right now, nothing gives the chef more pleasure than to have someone enjoying something he made from scratch. From smoked meat to homemade pasta to bread, whatever. All right, one more, and then I got to get a break in. Italian cities, at least those that have preserved their original footprints, are highly walkable and built on a smaller scale than most American urban centers that sprawl out for mile after mile. This is, to me, this is a very profound line. He said, American cities are built to the scale of the machine, the automobile. While the Italian cities I saw are built to the scale of the human being. Buildings are not impossibly tall, streets are not huge and filled with rushing vehicles. It's a world a human can move in and feel at home in. I love that line. American cities are built to the scale of the machine. Italian cities are built to the scale of the human being. We are built here in St. George for the machine. You can't really go very far in this city unless you have a car. Just food for thought. We're going to take a break, and hopefully get the name of that last winner. And we'll be back here on the Anna Griffin Show. Thanks for listening.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
9:51 almost. We're running out of time. I did want to throw a couple of quotes your way. Number one is from Russell M. Nelson, the late president, died Saturday night of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Literally thousands of quotes from him. He's been president of the church for 7 years, but one of my favorites is he said, quote, "My concern is that contention is becoming accepted as a way of life." Think about that. If we could get rid of contention, and how good would your life be if there was no contention? The other quote is from Charlie Kirk, and this is the one I wanted to talk about for the next 7 or 8 minutes, okay? Charlie said famously, this is a quote right from Charlie. It was at one of his Turning Point events, and a guy came up and asked him a couple of questions about, you know, abortion and about families and stuff. And he said, listen, find a woman, marry her, provide, have more kids than you can afford. That's my advice for young men. Don't play the victim, even though you legitimately can play the victim card on everything we've said. The mindset of a victim is parasitic to your soul. How old was Charlie Kirk? Has the wisdom of a 70-year-old. But listen to what he says as a 31-year-old. He said, the mindset of a victim is parasitic to your soul. The part I wanted to ask you about, talk to you about, was the part where he says, find a woman, marry her, provide, have more kids than you can afford. What does he mean by that? Remember, he was talking to a college kid when he said this. He wasn't talking to a 40-year-old who was making $100,000 a year. He was talking to a college kid. And I remember getting that advice when I was a young man. Similar advice from a church leader. He said, we were talking about starting a family, having kids. We didn't have any yet. And this church leader told me, he said, because I asked him, should we wait to have kids or should we have them, you know, and figure it out? He said, don't wait. He didn't say have more kids than you can afford, but he said something akin to, you'll figure it out. It'll work. Have the kids. Enjoy life. Figure it out along the way. And as my kids have come to me in recent years, some of them just starting out the journey of life with their spouses, they've asked me the same question. What do you think we should do? Should we wait? We're in college. If we have a kid, it'll mess everything up. And I always, always tell them, Lick, have kids. You never know who's up there waiting to come bless your family. You never know what's going to, you know, what a kid will do to change your life. And I promise you it will be for the better. It'll be hard, but it'll be worth it. Right? So when Charlie Kirk says, find a woman, marry her, provide, have more kids than you can afford, he doesn't mean that you can afford ever. He means that you can afford now. Because when you have the kids, you'll find a way to afford it. Great article by Sarah Wilder online, the title, You Have More Babies Than You Can Afford. She says, listen, the naysayers say, oh, every kid's going to cost you $200,000 more a year, or not a year, in a lifetime. And said, you can't afford that. Well, they're basing that on the rent going up, you having to get a bigger house every time and stuff. And I got to tell you, if you have a 3-bedroom house, you have one kid or two kid or kids or 4 kids, you can still fit in that house. Don't buy into the fallacy that the kid has to have his own room and his own this and his own that and his own. He didn't even need a phone yet, for crying out loud. Have the kids. Figure it out along the way. Everybody's like, well, that's irresponsible. You're talking about having kids when you can't afford kids. No, I'm talking about having kids and then figuring out how to afford kids. I can tell you, when we had three little boys for a while, we couldn't afford them. We had to figure it out. And we didn't buy boats and wave runners and UHVs, and they didn't even have them back then. They were ATVs back then. But, you know, clothes were quite often hand-me-downs or DI or thrift stores, right? And all I'm saying is you figure out a way if you really, and you, I don't think everyone, but I think most people, when they get a kid, they go, okay, what that kid needs is more important than what I need. And you figure it out. And maybe you don't buy that Starbucks latte, or maybe you don't, I don't know, get that new video game or buy that new truck or whatever it is. You go, you know what, I can't do that right now. And someday you will be able to. I'm living proof, right? I couldn't buy that stuff when I was younger, but I can get some of it now because the kids are moved out and I have more money. So if missing out on restaurants and vacations is what's keeping you from having children, let me tell you, you will survive not having those things. But when you grow, this is from Sarah now, when you grow too old to even consider children in the future, your friends who are spending their declining years with their grandchildren won't seem all that poor compared to your own affluent existence. Don't believe the statistics. Have more children than you can afford. Well said, Sarah. And I echo those sentiments. I really do. I think that, and I'm not telling you to, you know, young people, go out and have 8 kids or 12 kids or whatever. I don't know what the number is. Maybe it's 1, maybe it's 2, maybe it's 5. I don't know. I had 5. What I'm telling you is you'll figure it out. If dad has to work, if you're willing to work, dad, I was. If dad has to work 3 jobs or mom has to go to work part of the time or whatever, if you have to play Mr. Mom during the day and work at night, whatever it takes, you will figure it out if you love those kids, and you will. I just think it's worth it. And again, like Sarah said, when you're old and you have those kids surrounding you, and you're playing with your grandkids, and you're sitting and enjoying the fruits, the literal fruits of your loins, you'll be like, yeah, it was worth it. It was totally worth it. All right, did want to remind you, tonight is the Desert Garden birthday party. What is it called? Yeah, the I'm going to get to the thing so I can read it correctly here. Red Hills Desert Garden 10th birthday party tonight, 5:30 to 7:30. There will be face painting, refreshments, games. I think there's going to be cookie decorating contest. Red Hills Desert Garden is Utah's first desert demonstration garden, featuring more than 5,000 water-efficient plants, a slot canyon with a stream stocked with real native fish from the Virgin River, and even some dinosaur tracks. It's the Red Hills Desert Garden 10th birthday party tonight, 5:30 to 7:30. You don't have to go the whole time. You can just go pop in at 5:30 or at 6 or 6:30 or 6:45 or 7:15 or whatever. But, yeah, the party goes from 5:30 to 7:30. I think it's really cool, and I think that, you know, Zach and those guys over the Water Conservancy Department said, listen, you can still have a beautiful yard. It just doesn't have to be grass. You can be just like our beautiful desert, Red Hills Desert Garden. Anyway, I have used up all my time. Thanks again to those who played and won our contest. Let's see if I got a name of that winner real quick. It is, oh, darn it, come on, phone. One of those face unlock things. No, don't have a winner yet. Anyway, we're out of time. Thanks for listening. Tomorrow, I believe Jimmy's going to join me. Haven't confirmed it for sure yet, but we're planning on Jimmy Keston tomorrow on the last day of September. We'll talk to you then.